Thank you, Pastor Greg. And if you're just joining us today, you've got to come back next week because I'm not the pastor. You've got to come back to hear Greg teach. I know you will be blessed. We're in the middle of a sermon series here at Abundant Life called God's Playlist for the Soul. It's a study of the book of Psalms. The book of Psalms is one of the most beloved chunks of the Bible for many reasons. One, because they're often very short and we feel like we can master one quickly. I think an even deeper reason, though, is because the Psalms are so relatable. Very often when we're reading the Bible, we're reading about, we're like sort of watching from the outside. Like we're reading about Noah and the ark, but we're not building a ship ourselves. We're reading about David and Goliath, but there's no giants looming on our horizon. But when we come to the Psalms, what we discover is a person at prayer. That's something that we all do. We all talk to God. Even your atheist, skeptical friends sometimes talk to God. They may not tell you about it, but God knows. And so when we stumble upon the Psalms, we find in it something we can enter into. We don't just watch from the outside. We can go into the psalm with the psalmist. I like to tell the students that I minister to. For those of you who don't know, my regular job, my ministry, is to students at Stanford University. I work with a ministry called Chi Alpha. It's got a Greek name because the New Testament was written in Greek. 2 Corinthians 5:20, we're Christ ambassadors. And so one thing I tell the students periodically is that there's a psalm for every season of the soul. Whenever you're going through just a tough patch in life or a joyful patch or whatever sort of emotional state you're in, there's a psalm that reflects that. And you can sort of go to it and sort of get some divine coaching on how to go about expressing this place in your life to God. And so today we come to Psalm chapter 90. Let's see what season of the soul it will help us with. Starts a Psalm 90, a prayer of Moses, the man of God. That's the superscript. I'm seeing before the first verse. A prayer of Moses, the man of God. Now, I don't know why it is, but the phrase man of God always makes me smile. It tickled. I once got a phone call from someone who I literally had never talked to before in my life. He's like, I'm looking for a man of God called Glenn Davis. And I just started laughing. I was like, well, you found Glenn Davis? That part I can assure you of. But it's such an interesting title. It's actually a beautiful title. Now, I want you to think about the other things that Moses' titles could be. For example, if you go to the U.S. Capitol, you go to Washington, D.C., you'll find sculptures and paintings of Moses the lawgiver. He brought the law down from the mountain. He's the foundation. How much of a boss do you have to be that over 3,000 years after your death, that on a continent you didn't know existed, there is artwork in your honor? Moses the lawgiver. Moses the founder of Israel. I mean, before Moses, the Jewish people were a people. After Moses, Israel was a nation. I mean, there's so many things that fit on this guy's resume. But here is the part that matters. Moses, the man of God. It's the epitaph that I want. And I think it's the epitaph we should all want. Are you a man? Are you a woman of God? Or are you on track to become? We're going to put that on the shelf for now. We'll pick it back up towards the end of the psalm. So now we dig in to Psalm chapter 90, verse 1. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. That's where Moses starts his prayer, with faith. There's two real assertions that he's building this prayer upon. First, that he has a connection with God. God is his dwelling place. Not just his, but of the people that are with Moses. God, you are our dwelling place. You're not just the omnipotent ruler of quasars and black holes and the vast expanse of interstellar space. No, you are the God in whom we can take refuge. We have a connection with you. The second assertion is that that's very, very valuable because you are the everlasting God. You are the God of the cosmos, the God of omnipotent power, the God of eternal wisdom. You are that God, and we have a connection with you. That's a foundation for prayer right there, that we've got a God who can do anything, and we can take refuge in him. He is our dwelling place. That's childlike faith right there. But one thing that we all encounter in life is this just reality that at times, faith is hard to hold on to. There are obstacles to faith. that this conviction that God is our dwelling place and that he is truly God is put to the test. And this psalm begins to explore some of that, starting in verse 3. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. That's actually pretty savage. Dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. Poof. We live in a culture that worships bodies. We worship youth. We idealize that time of life where we were strong and healthy and all this stuff was going on. Supermodels sell chapstick, like the least supermodel-y thing you can imagine. But like just any way that we can put a young, healthy body up there, our culture is just impelled to do it. Covers of magazines, billboards, everywhere. Gorgeous people, they get better jobs. They make more money. But they're just dust. You're just dust. I'm just dust. There was this Star Trek episode that I saw years and years ago where they encountered these aliens and there was some sort of communication issue, and I forget the whole setup, but the punchline at one point was the aliens were trying to talk about the humans, and their term for them was ugly bags of mostly water. Ugly bags of mostly water. And that's true. You take away the water, all we are is ugly. All we are is just that we're dust. We're dust. We're dust chasing dust. We're like a country road. That's all that we ultimately are. And after leaving that savagery aside, the main point remains. God may be our dwelling place, but it seems like the Grim Reaper has a key. I was once having a friendly debate, conversation, interchange with a friend. He got mad at me because something he'd heard me say in a sermon, which, by the way, if you get mad at something I say in a sermon, please email Pastor Greg all your thoughts. He would love to hear them. We were having this. He heard me say something that basically led him to believe that I did not believe that every time that someone prayed for healing, they would be instantly healed completely. He's like, "That's heresy," and I'm like, "Bro," and he's like, "No, seriously, everyone gets healed all the time," and I'm like, "Fake news, dude," and he's like, "No," and we went back and forth, and I was like, "Okay, I just have a question for you. Do you believe the Bible is true?" He's like, "Of course. It is appointed to man once to die, and after that to face judgment. What are you going to die of? Like someday." You're going to be sitting on there, and I don't think you're dying of nothing. That's not how it works. You're going to die. And are you going to sit there and tell me that, like, of all the humans who Billy Graham didn't have enough faith to, like, make it, maybe eke it out to 135 or something? Like, we just all keep dying around the same time? I just don't see it, man. I don't see it. Death is a reality, and death is a bummer. And death makes it hard to maintain this belief in a God who is our dwelling place. And a God who can do anything. The psalmist goes on. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They're like the new grass of the morning. In the morning it springs up new, but by evening it is dry and withered. Wow. 1,000 years to you are like a day. That actually ties back to the dust thing, I'm pretty sure. So you're dust. You're dust and you're going back to dust. 1,000 years are like a day. Well, who was the one human literally made out of dust? Adam. God came and like, look, got a bunch of dust together and breathed in it, and there was Adam. And Adam lived over 900 years. And that's a great long life. I mean, if I got half that, I'd be pretty, pretty proud of myself. And from God's perspective, that's a day. I mean, it's nice. Sure, it's great, but I mean, 1,000 years compared to 1 million, 1 billion, 1 trillion, it just doesn't compute. It's impressive to us. Like for us, that's like 40 generations. How far back can you trace your ancestry? Can you chart your lineage? Maybe 3-4 generations. Maybe if you're into history, like you can go, I don't know, 15 or 20, I guess. But like genealogy is your thing. But 40 generations to God from the vantage point of eternity, it's just like a blip. It's a footnote. In human history. It's not even get a full page. Now, when we gaze fully into that fact, we have a choice. We can conclude the universe seems just kind of barren and meaningless, and death just undermines everything. Or we can retain that faith that Moses had, that God, you're our dwelling place. God, you are the everlasting. I'm not everlasting, but you are everlasting. That's one way of thinking that can derail us. There's another way That's related, but a little bit different. Psalm 90, starting now in verse 7. We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures. Yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. So one way of thinking is the universe feels indifferent and empty and just death comes for us all. The grim reaper comes and just takes his toll. And like you could be like a Nietzschean sort of a nihilist. You could be like a French, you know, existentialist author or something and be like the end of one of those depressing European films where everyone dies alone in the rain. Like you could think that way. Or Americans like, no, we're going to do spandex and superpowers. Woo! We just think very differently. You could have that way of thinking. Or maybe the problem is not that God is indifferent, but that God is actively paying attention. Not that death comes from us all casually, just like, you know, hey, there's this giant spreadsheet and just I generate some random numbers. And when your number's up, because I got to keep the system balanced, sort of an indifferent approach. No, maybe God's just mad at you. Maybe he's just paying attention to how much wickedness you've done. Oh, that lie, that goes into the, that's 5 days off your life right there. Whoa, cheated on the tax. Wait, who'd you vote for? Okay, one year right there. By the way, I want to remind you the church is having a prayer session in conjunction with this upcoming election. Maybe you've already voted. Whether you voted or not, come pray. Come pray for America. Come pray for the outcome. Come pray for our social fabric. That's going to be this Friday over Zoom. You'll see more about that online. But please, prayer matters. Honestly, in California, prayer matters much more than your vote. I think they've already counted the electoral votes in California in the official tally. It doesn't really matter what you do, but your prayers can make a difference. So maybe the problem isn't that God doesn't notice, but that God does. If God pays attention, we're all in trouble. It's not just that we're dying, we're being killed by a righteous, wrathful God. And so whether God is paying attention or God is not, either way, is God our dwelling place? Is he the everlasting God in whom we can rejoice? And here's where Moses goes. And I love this. This is why his epitaph is Moses, the man of God. One of the reasons. Verse 11. If only we knew the power of your anger, your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. If only we knew the power of your anger, if we grasped God's anger accurately, not just the fact of his anger, but the power of his anger, Moses says we would think very differently. And it would then give us this, we would be taught by the Lord to number our days in a way that would lead to us having wisdom. What he's just expressed is not wise. But what he's about to express is very wise, and it pivots on this idea of grasping the power of God's anger. Okay, God is not stalking you with a divine smite button. Because if he was, you'd be gone. You wouldn't last 90 years. I can hang out 90 years. God's mad at me, but I'll power through. No, 90 seconds it would be impressive. 9 seconds would be amazing. God once spoke and a universe appeared. If he just goes, shh, we're all gone. Like, if God is actively seeking to just smite people, I mentioned the story Noah in the ark earlier. That's not a happy kid's story. That's not just about a guy who likes sailing. That's about God saying, all right, I'm done. Boom, the heavens open up. And everybody dies except for just like this ark and the people that are on it. That is God. It's going to happen again eventually at the end of time. That's what makes it the end of time. God just says, all right, we're done. I've had enough. That's not what's happening right now. So it's not that God is making your life miserable. If that's the way you're thinking wrongly. If you understand the power of God's anger, you realize that's not a legitimate reason to have your faith set aside. And also, it's not that God doesn't notice. Of course God notices. He is the everlasting God. It's not just his anger, it's the power of his anger. When you grasp that, when you grasp who God is, how big God is, you realize that these things that seem to like an adolescent who's emerging and starting to read some philosophy, like, oh, wow, this is like a devastating art. No, it's sophomoric. It's idiotic. It's foolish. It doesn't hold water. The more you think about it, the more like, that doesn't really, no. No. I think the first two verses were right. God is our everlasting refuge. Yeah, he's our dwelling place. Because that is what makes sense. When we do that, we get to this place where we have to shift the way we think about this life. If these ways are not, if it's not just pain and suffering until we die, and if it's not just a pitiless and different universe, if there's another framing, how do we get there? Well, teach us, O Lord, to number our days rightly. That's a really interesting prayer. Because I just decided to find out. Today, I'm 1,961 days old. 16,961 days old. Now, that was not hard. Like, that's actually a math problem you could assign a third grader. Now, they might make some errors with the leap years. Like, you have to coach them a little bit. But they're going to get pretty darn close. Like, numbering your days is not hard. Now, well, what about the future days? Well, okay, I don't know how many days I'm going to live, but I can put an upper bound on it. I ain't going to be here in 100 years. That's not going to happen. 50, probably not. I mean, maybe. That's within the realm of possibility. But I'm going to have to start eating my Wheaties or something. I don't know. And even then, there's no guarantees, right? Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe there's another plague that breaks out. Maybe instead of like a COVID, it's like Ebola goes global. Like, who knows? I don't know. You don't know. It's just, we don't, but I can put it upper bound. But it's easy then to like get a broad number. This is about how many days I probably got. That can't be what God means. Something so trivial, or Moses means, it can't be so trivial that we need to pray for God to help us number our days if it's so easy to enumerate them. There's a right way and a wrong way. Maybe there's many wrong ways, but there's a way to number our days that we need God's help with. And I think a famous philosopher / scientist named Blaise Pascal got this very brilliantly in a collection of sort of witticisms and observations that he wrote called The Pensées. He said, anyone with only a week to live will not find it in his interest to believe that all this, all the universe, is just a matter of chance. Now, if we were not bound by our passions, a week and 100 years would come to the same thing. That's numbering your days rightly. He's saying, look, I'm a mathematician. I just understand. You got this huge, big universe. It's massive, and it seems to go back into the past and on into the future for as far as we can see. And it's, we can feel so small in light of it. But if I told you right now, you've got 1 week to live, how would you think about things? Well, your first thought would always be like, there's no meaning or purpose. You'd be like, what can I do? What can I do to maximize? It's like, now, when you really grasp that, let's talk about 100 years versus a week compared to like a geologic era, compared to like the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, compared to something much bigger. Now, compare all that to eternity. A week and 100 years, a week and 1 million years, they're the same. And so if you would live differently knowing you've only got a day, a week, a month left to live, start doing that now. Because from the vantage point of eternity, you've got a day left to live, if you're lucky. So order your life. That's what it means to number your days rightly. One. I got one. 1,000 years like a day, I'm not even going to get all the way to one. I'm a fraction. Some of us are more fractional than others. I'm kind of short here. I'm a member of the Zacchaeus fan club. If you are too, I just encourage you to walk around this world like a dime in a world full of pennies. Paul gets at this, I think the same idea, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 to 18. He says, therefore we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. That's what Paul gets. That we number your days rightly. Eternity looms large. Everything, even the biggest of things in this world, gets much, much smaller. It's all about perspective. I mean, the sun is so much more massive than a quarter. Yet if I take a quarter and hold it up to the sky, I can blot out the sun because of my perspective. I can lose sight of the giant flaming nuclear ball of gas that gives all energy to everything on Earth with a piece of metal about that big. And that's what we do in life all the time. We can lose sight of the massive source of energy that fuels everything because we stub our toe. Or something big. I don't mean to make light of this. Or something that legitimately is big from an earthly perspective. We become unemployed against our will. We get broken up with. We get horrible health news. Someone that we love goes through a really tough time. Maybe someone close to us dies. And these are real. I don't mean to make light of them. But in light of eternity, when you number your days rightly, we just need to recognize we're blotting out the sun with a quarter. And that if we reframe our perspective, it changes everything. It changes everything. And now Moses starts to crank with his prayer. Verse 13, "Relent, Lord. How long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us." Yes, establish the work of our hands. Psalm 90. That's a good prayer. It started in faith, and then it waded deep into the weeds, and then just like popped up and started skimming with a joy-filled, a life-enchanting faith. What are you going through right now? I don't know. I imagine a lot. There's a lot happening in the year 2020, and we're not done yet. There's still 2 months. I don't know all that's happened. I don't know what's happening right now. But this is what I know, that when you number your days rightly, you can change the way you relate to them. Count your days. I don't know what the count is. But I know this is the point. There's a number. Eternity, there's no number. It's infinity. But how many days we've got left, how many days we've lived so far, they fade away into insignificance. And so when we fix our eyes on eternity, that allows us to change the way that we relate to this world. So rejoice in God. Pray these prayers because you have an everlasting God who is your dwelling place. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love. Let us sing for joy all our days. I can pray that prayer because I've grasped the anger of God, the power of the anger of God. And I've counted my days properly, and that means that I feel free to enjoy my days because I know God's not trying to eradicate me and that he's there and he's real and he cares. And that means that whatever I'm going through, there's a reason in this season. And I don't like it much, maybe, but I will get past it. Because whatever the obstacle is that confronts me, it's temporary. Whatever obstacle confronts me, even if it kills me, I live longer than it. Because I come back to life again someday. I'm raised to new life with Christ. And from the vantage point of eternity, I will look back someday and say, man, that thing was not great. But you know what? I have to look it up in my archives to remember it right now. Because it's been 10 trillion years and life's been pretty darn good. Make us glad, Moses prays, for as many years as you have afflicted us. We've all had hard times. And knowing that God is not trying to just smite us and destroy us, and he's not indifferent to us, we can then pray with faith, Lord, intervene, fix things. This is not something that you're not just blasting me with terrors. And so, God, this sucks right now. I don't like it much. Can you just turn things around a little bit? And you can pray that to a great God who is your dwelling place. It gives you freedom to pray with hope. May your deeds be shown to your servants. God, do miracles. God, you have amazing power. You are greater than any pandemic. You are greater than any obstacle in my way. Lord, show up and do stuff. Show off. God, I would love to have you do things in front of me that I can't help but boast about you to others because of them. Do that. I'll pray in faith for you to do healings. I'll pray in faith for you to do provision. I'll pray in faith for you to just open doors where there seems to be no natural way forward. And then Moses concludes, God, give us favor and establish the work of our hands. So we started with God as our dwelling place. The everlasting God. Just the huge cosmic God with whom we have a connection. And Moses winds up, so God, the things that I'm going to do, the work of my hands, the stuff I'm going to do this week, Lord, establish it. Because God, I can't figure out all this earth. I don't know all the dins and outs. I don't know why these things happen this way. It's so much, but this is what I know. It's not because you're mad at me, and it's not because you don't care. And so, God, I'm going to pray in great faith. Not understanding everything, but knowing this. You are my dwelling place. You are everlasting. And so, God, make me happy. Turn things around. Do some miracles. And, God, this stuff I'm about to do this week, bless it. So I don't know what you've got to get done, but commit it to the Lord. Say, God, I've got to get that quarter of the report in or whatever. I don't do this. What quarter are we in? I don't even know. I got to get that big report in for my boss. Well, Lord, establish work in my hands. God, I got to get this package out in the mail. Well, Lord, bless my hands, and I pray through this it would bless other people. Lord, I've got to teach my kids like how to do algebra. Well, Lord, bless you and keep you. Have fun with that. But Lord, establish the work of my hands. Lord, I got to discipline my kids. Lord, establish the work of my hands. And now we come back around to the beginning. Moses, the man of God. All the temporal stuff that he accomplished, which is, like, if you only know a few people from the century Moses lived, you know Moses. Like, that's how amazing his life was. But the thing that he is remembered for is his connection to eternity. And then a billion years in heaven, we're all going to say, yeah, that's Moses, the man of God. Oh, yeah, he did some stuff with some tablets. That was pretty cool. He walked through the Red Sea. That was kind of amazing. But wow, he really knew God on earth when it was harder. That's respectful. That's my desire. And I hope it's your desire as well. That on this earth, you would become known as a man, as a woman, as a friend of God. Now that happens in these times through Jesus Christ. So if your faith is not yet in Jesus, I encourage you, trust him. Turn to him. Jesus, God made flesh. We're about to celebrate that in the coming holiday of Christmas. This morning can be Christmas in your heart. Let Christ be born there through faith. Turn to God and invite him to transform you and lead you into the future. Say, God, I want you to be my dwelling place, the everlasting God, and do these things for me. And Lord, ultimately, establish work in my hands and help me to number my days rightly. I'm just going to pray a quick prayer. We're going to do the revelation closing that Pastor Greg has kicked us off on, and then I'll wish you well on this week. God, we love you, and we trust you. Teach us to pray like Moses prayed. Lord, if this is not the season of the soul for someone listening right now, Lord, I pray you would guide them to a psalm that is, a psalm that guides them in how to pray with faith, to pray in a way that reflects your truth and that goes in a direction that will establish their life in a way that pleases you. God, any who need faith in you, Lord, I pray you'd give them the gift of faith right now. Open their hearts. Remove the veil from their eyes that blinds them to the beauty and truth of the gospel. And Lord, for those of us who are going through hard times right now, and I know there are many in this weird 2020, God, be their encourager, be their comforter. God, I pray that you would give them as many happy days as they've had bad days, that you would teach them to sing songs and give them joy. And Lord, you would establish work of their hands. That is our prayer for everyone, that you would be a blesser and that they would see your blessing. In Jesus' mighty name, amen. Revelation chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. We've begun concluding this way. If you would read along out loud with me at home. To him who loves us and has freed us from our sins by his blood and has made us to be a kingdom and priest to serve his God and Father, to him be glory and power forever and ever. Amen. Hey, please remember the trunk or treat on the church premises is happening this Saturday, October 30th. We'd love to have you here. Have a great day. God bless.